Today's show is already in the can. Hey, it's Kirk Harnack, and This Week in Radio Tech is coming up with John Bissett. He is the author of the column called Workbench. Chris Tarr is here, too. We're going to have some great ideas for you, some products, some techniques to try out, and a lot of fun advice. It's a good show today. Coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at Nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb from the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host, wondering... somewhere there's a tower with no light on it because it's here in my office, which relates to the title of today's episode. Today's episode is called Breaking and Entering with John Bissett. We'll introduce John in a minute or two. First of all, I'm Kirk. I am your host for the show, or the co-host for the show. I have another host along with me. I'm in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee, where it's a hot one today. It's at the airport, last check, 93 degrees. And so humid out there. I can't wait for the summer to start getting cooler, but that'll probably be a while. Glad you're here, and glad that Chris Tarr is here from Muckwonago, Wisconsin, where it's probably just about as hot. Hey, Chris, welcome in.
Hello there. I am sitting here in the basement of the cheese bunker, and it is, it is 98, last I checked. So just as hot over here. Humidity's kind of down a little bit, so that's nice. It's going to be a good couple of days here. My daughter and I are getting ready to drive up to Green Bay, Wisconsin tomorrow for the weekend for a Comic-Con, which is our big thing that she and I do together. So I'm glad the weather is going to be a little bit nicer for that.
That is awesome. And speaking of all that humidity, Chris, as part of our show today, we're going to cover a lot of things as we do when John Bissett is our guest. We've got a number of products and techniques and things to look out for. But one of them that I want to cover again, because, you know, when your shirt is drenched with sweat because you've been outside in this weather, the topic of humidity and moisture-laden air really comes in. And it's a good time to remind ourselves about what are we trying to do with cooling transmitter sites, with providing airflow and providing a comfortable work environment, if not at least for ourselves, and I realize we're not there very often, but a comfortable work environment for the equipment too, because it does make a difference. So we'll talk about some of the factors involved there, how we used to do things and how maybe we're getting a little smarter about how we keep things at least somewhat cool at the transmitter sites. But now let's bring in John Bissett, our guest. John Bissett, my colleague at Telos Alliance and the author of Workbench in Radio World Magazine. John, great to see you. Hello.
Hey, how are you, Kirk? Good to be here. Hi, Chris.
We're all here. Oh, Chris.
Yep, there
Chris
we go.
Hasn't had lunch yet.
I know, I'm not. Sorry.
Well, as long as you brought enough to share, Chris, we're going to be okay.
For all of us. That's right.
Do you like pickled potato chips? Pickle flavored potato chips?
Yeah, they're amazing. They're good. I like them.
Yeah, that's what I'm having.
Wow. Here,
I've never heard of them, Chris.
Yeah, they are delicious.
Is that a Wisconsin thing? Like cheese curds?
Definitely cheese curds are a Wisconsin thing. I don't know about these. I wouldn't be surprised if that was a Wisconsin thing with all the stuff we eat like that. So I'm not sure.
I haven't tried yet the new pickle and liver updated chips on my grocery store.
Only in Mississippi, Kirk.
Yeah, right.
No, I made that.
Yeah. That's squirrel flavored chips. Out of Mississippi.
Chips. So, squirrel chips, are those like beaver nuggets from Buc-ee's?
Yeah. By the way, not quite.
I just remembered I left my Bucky's cup somewhere last night. I left. It's actually in the choir loft over at Forest Hills Baptist Church because I went to choir practice last night. We had ice cream, a lot of fun, a lot of hooping and hollering, and then we went to singing. And doggone it! So I had to grab my non-Bucky's cup. But, speaking of Beaver Nuggets, this made me think of my Bucky's cup. I'll have to make a special trip over there tomorrow and see if I can get it. Or maybe just wait till Sunday. Maybe you think he'll still be in the choir loft on Sunday? Or will somebody already have found it?
I'm just jealous that you have a Bucky's.
There's a brand new one that's opened up in Crossville, Tennessee. That's between Nashville and Knoxville on I-40. And then I'm told that the largest one ever is going to be opening up near Sevierville. That's near Gatlinburg, Tennessee on I-40. So two of them are opening up on I-40 in Tennessee. One of them's already open.
So lucky.
So lucky to have our Bucky. You can't just pass a Bucky's. You can't.
No. Well, when my kids lived in Dallas, every time I'd go down there, I had to stop at Bucky's and get Beaver Nuggets.
Yeah. Yes. They are crack for adults, for otherwise non-drug addled adults. I've gained plenty of weight on Beaver Nuggets. Hey, okay. Well, we got to talk about Nautel real quick. They put together this Transmission Talk Tuesdays, and they're doing it again. The last one in July is coming up July 26th, Tuesday, July 26th. Go online and register. Go to nautel.com/webinars. It's another Transmission Talk Tuesday. It's even though it's under /webinars, it's not a webinar. It's a roundtable discussion, and you can take part in the discussion if you want to. Unlike this show, where we only let people like Chris and John on the show, some people say we'll let anybody on, but that's not true. So go to this website, nautel.com/webinars. Click on Transmission Talk Tuesday. You'll get to this page. Hey, Suncast, if you'll scroll down just a hair, we'll see what's coming up on July the 26th, Tuesday, July 26th. Ah. Site improvement on a budget. That means for us cheapos, site improvement on a budget. What can you do and not spend a lot of money and make your site, I guess your transmitter site, better? Chris, if you were participating in Transmission Talk Tuesday, what advice would you give to improve a transmitter site and on the cheap?
Well, actually, funny you should mention that. This is not really an on the cheap kind of equipment improvement, but I just put these together, and I've got a bunch of them, and it's basically, I'm going to post it on the door, and it's a checklist of things to do before you leave the site. So things like sweep the floor, change ear filters, test the generator, make sure transmitters are remote. There's a whole list of things here, and I have them in plastic sleeves, and they're going to go on the door. So as you walk out, just a reminder of all the things that, and it's not inclusive, but, all the things to check, is down to check the air filter on the exciter. So that's, I always say the best way to not spend money to transmitter site is to do maintenance.
That's a great point. And also make sure the transmitter or the remote control is in remote.
Yes, that's another good one.
It's not on the list. Oh my gosh. Depending on which one you have, which remote control or transmitter or whatever you have, if you've got a local remote switch on it.
I've done that and then left and then had to come back.
That is a safety thing, right? I mean, if you leave it in local control, and that means nobody can turn it something on by remote when you're maybe in it fixing it, that's for safety. Isn't that why there's a lockout for that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And really, the remote has sometimes it's local, sometimes it's maintenance. And that's actually the other thing that does is prevents a call out if there's an issue, because you're obviously transmitter's going to be off or whatever while you're doing maintenance. I don't use that function very much on the remote because it just calls me. But I do obviously always put the transmitter in local. In fact, I'll give you a quick story here, actually, related to that. I have Arc Plus Touches, and that's what I'm rolling out to all the sites, which have automation. And somebody asked, well, isn't it, wouldn't it be great if you have a script that turns a transmitter off if it fails and turns the backup on and does all that automatically? I said, no, that's awful. And the reason being is you don't want to be turning stuff on if you don't know who's there. Somebody could be working on it turn it off and all of a sudden, you know, the script runs and starts turning stuff on, who knows what the situation is there. So, you know, there's automation and then there's, you know, automation that shouldn't be done. And that's one of them. I never have automation with remote controls do anything that I wouldn't want to, you know, that I basically wouldn't want to be there to do. So, you know, because again, the last thing you need is somebody working on the transmitters and have them turn on automatically. So, and that's the other thing the maintenance thing can do is if you have scripts that do that, you know, that'll prevent those from running.
Cool. That's a good point. Good point. Yeah. Yeah. And we don't always remember to, you know, to turn a break. We may not need to turn a breaker off to do something simple to the transmitter, but we don't want it coming on. And we think we're the only person that might do that. But somebody remote could do that. Or, like you said, if the remote control is programmed.
Interestingly enough, I've seen sites where the transmitter is tied into the main breaker. So you can't really turn off the power, which is just, first of all, very dangerous and very stupid. All of my sites, I put in a second disconnect off of the breaker panel, one of those nice big lever ones. Because also with a breaker, you know, I don't trust breakers as much. But when you got that big old lever and you can physically chunk that out of circuit, it's just another peace of mind. And it's, you know, and then you can lock it or, you know, whatever you want to do if there's other people there. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we all know the story. Disconnect the power, you know, take the Jesus stick and whack all the capacitors and everything and be safe. I mean, there's just, again, you know, it takes a little bit of time, but, you know, take that time and be safe.
Just like your outdoor air conditioner unit. And by the way, we're going to talk about that in a little bit. There should be a disconnect out there, whether it's probably not the lever kind. It's probably the kind you got to open up and, you know, pull the link out or whatever. By the way, if you do install, and that's a great point, Chris, you should have a disconnect even close to the transmitter, you know, nearby. So you don't have to go walk, you know, across the building. If it's a big room, you don't want to have to walk a ways to turn that power off. You'd kind of like it right there. But when you get that big disconnect switch, be sure you get the spare things for it in case the fuse blows, right? So a spare screwdriver to stick in where the fuse should be and spare tinfoil, right? And maybe a spare 50 caliber bullet, you know, cartridge to go in
pennies.
All the standard things that we see in pictures.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. I was telling the station owner, because we're putting in a couple of new transmitters, that there's a couple of things that I always get. Surge suppressor, separate disconnect, and the toroids, the ferrite. And all of that is such, you know, there's a little bit of upfront cost to doing that, but the insurance and peace of mind you get from doing that is, you know, priceless. You know, I love the physical disconnect with the fuses. You know, the surge suppressor, I mean, that goes without saying. You know, certainly anything you can do to prevent zaps. So, I mean, that's just kind of a standard thing now when I do installations. Always have a separate disconnect.
Something else that John and I and you are going to get to talk about. Chris, when you get a new transmitter, in either the transmitter or the disconnect box that goes on the wall, do you get the mouse family pre-installed, or do you wait for that to happen later on?
If you do the site right, you probably won't get that far. They hopefully don't even get into the building.
There you go. That's it. Hey, Kurt, you know, something else real quick. You're talking about how to fix up a transmitter site. Get rid of all the junk. I don't know why general managers love to throw all the old junk at the transmitter site, but get rid of all of it. That'll make your site look really, really nice.
And it's not always the manager. A lot of times it's the engineer. We some of us engineers do have a little bit of a hoarder pack rat mentality. We can't.
Well, you never know when you're going to use. You never know when you're going to use that CRT monitor again,
right? Yeah, or that 16-inch transmitter. Yeah.
Yeah,
there's a place for everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you've got to rent a storage unit to put that kind of stuff in, but yeah. Hey, let's jump right in. I know we've spent some time yapping here and it's fun. It's always good to, you know, reacquaint and talk about our fun stuff. But, John, you've got a series of pictures and Suncast is going to, go through them here for us. You've got some products, some interesting engineering situations, We got some things to talk about. So even before we take our next commercial break, why don't we get started on a couple of pictures? Suncast, sure. If you want to go, just pick one, Suncast. Oh, a whoopee cushion. Every transmitter site needs a whoopee cushion. What kind of whoopee cushion is this, John?
Oh, this is the breaking and entering. So this is a device that it's a rubber bladder that when you turn the little screw on the side, all the air comes out of it, and you can use it for leveling things like transmitters or equipment racks. But what I thought was most interesting is if you go on YouTube and look for the video on it, they use it for getting into a locked car when you've locked the keys in the car. What you do, this thing, when it's deflated, it's almost paper thin, and you can squeeze it into the crack between the door and the car and then start inflating it, and it will actually separate the door far enough that you can get a coat hanger or a stick or something in there to hit the button to unlock the car. And I thought it was the neatest idea, but we're not encouraging people to get into locked cars that way, but it's neat to find something that can have so many different uses. And in this case, if you're trying to level a transmitter, trying to level a rack, an equipment rack, or if you're putting in windows or doors to hold that door in place so you get the pins in the door hinges, these things work really, really well. And they're very inexpensive, Kirk. They're like under $20.
It'd be important to point out that this is shown basically fully inflated, but remember, yes, it starts life paper thin. So you can slide it, you know, under a rack if you need to level something up. And it you know, because a lot of times we'll have somebody, hey, Chris, grab the corner of that transmitter and push up a little bit. I'm going to put this shim under right here. Well, now you don't need Chris to do that. You can just slide this under the transmitter and pump it up.
Kirk, the neat thing about this, it will hold 300 pounds. That's what blew my mind. I mean, it's like, how can something like this do that? But the information on the website says that it will lift or support 300 pounds. So that gives you an idea of how much pressure can be inside that that inflatable bag.
Wow, this could be a whoopee cushion for anybody. My goodness, Chris. Chris, you got any ideas on how we might? What a great idea though to lift things, but maybe slip it in the car door to get that. Especially, this could be a new addition to the joke about the blonde who locked herself in the car. This will help you get to her, so that you can rescue her.
You could use it as a pillow if you need to lie down. I was just thinking about that with trying to lift transformers up and things like that inside of the transmitter, get the bolts in or whatever. Yeah, that's really cool. I like that.
I like it. I like it too. Let's look at it. By the way, where would you get that? John, Amazon. Where would you get that?
Okay. You just pick Amazon. It up off right. Amazon.
I'll find a link to that, and I'll find the YouTube video and put that in the show notes too about getting the car door open.
And it's officially called an air wedge.
Air wedge. Okay.
Not air wedgie, an air wedge.
Good gosh. High school humor here. All right. While all of our viewers and listeners are Googling air wedge bladder lifter YouTube whoopee cushion, don't worry, I'll put it in the show notes. All right. Let's take a look at another randomly selected picture that that Suncast will choose for us here.
Ooh. Oh, this is my favorite. Kirk, you and I were talking about this. This company developed this. You see, it's called BoShield. So the BOE is for Boeing. Boeing needed a water-resistant lubricant for using on the flaps and slats of airplanes that wasn't going to just disappear or run off. And this company developed this for Boeing. And it's now available, and where people are using it the most are with bicycle chains, so that the chain stays lubricated, but you don't get a mess all over your leg if your leg rubs up against it, or if you go through water, the water doesn't rinse everything off. You were telling me that you use this stuff on your sliding glass door. And if you've got tracks that need to be lubricated, anything that needs lubrication, whether it be louvers or fans or whatever, you know, this would be really good stuff. And especially for locks, I know we've all used WD-40 and, you know, that's certainly works well, but this from the engineers that have sent this information into to Workbench, they swear by this stuff. They say it is just absolutely great. And it's about $10 a can. Again, available Chris, on Amazon.
I'm sure Chris can comment on this. You know, guilty as charged. I've used WD-40 where I shouldn't have many times because it's handy. It's everywhere. Every hardware store has it. And we think it's a lubricant because when you first spray it on, yes, it gets rid of water. It's a water dispersant. So it gets rid of water and it feels a little slippery when you first put it on. But, and last week I ran into this in Mississippi, some locks, some of those dial tumbler, you know, the combination locks, the real heavy duty ones, that had WD-40 applied to them, and they were dry as a bone, and they were hard to turn, and this would have been the right thing to use on them. I didn't have this handy. I left this at the house. But WD-40 ain't the right thing to use because it will dry stuff out. That's what it's meant to do because it's not a lubricant. It's a water dispersant. Chris, have you gotten to use this stuff yet? What do you think?
I haven't yet, but I'm really interested in that for coax switches for AM lever switches.
Oh, that's a great idea.
That would be great for that. I mean, I use lithium grease to keep that stuff lubricated, but that would be, I think, very handy out at the doghouses for the AM antenna switches.
And maybe it's just me, but to me, and I've used lithium grease on a lot of, you know, door hold opens and you know, hinges and things like that, but it seems to attract more dust. Am I wrong mm-hmm. about that? It seems to get,
it's grease.
Really,
so yeah, it's kind of tacky. Yeah.
And I don't know that this doesn't attract dust, but I've got this sliding glass door here at the house. I installed it myself literally 16 years ago when we first bought the house. And over time it gets really rough to open it and close it. And you can feel the wheels crunch, crunch, crunch. I'm sure it gets dirt and junk down in it. It's not really out in the weather, but it's right next to the weather. And I'd used WD-40 on it before. I may have used some spray on product before, but about 3 weeks ago, I put some of this on it for the first time I lubricated in several years. My grandkids were having a real hard time getting the door open and closed. Yeah, you know, an adult could do it. This on it, it's so quiet and it's so smooth. I don't know where the junk went to that obviously was in the rollers, but it's so good now. So
solve the
great
problem.
Idea on the AM contactors out at the tower sites. Yeah. And if you have an AM contactor on your Learjet, you can use it for that too. It'll absolutely
there you go.
Clear that up. And for your bicycle chain on your Cessna, it'll take care of that. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Our sponsors for today's show on This Week in Radio Tech, Angry Audio is one of our sponsors. And hey, I need to ask Chris Tarr, you're going to end up being a new spokesperson for Angry Audio. Isn't that right? Maybe not today, but it's coming up.
Yeah, very soon. And I'm very excited about it because I love, 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 love me some Angry Audio.
Yeah, me too. Well, today, Chris, you and I can both talk about this. I had an experience last week in Mississippi with a broken off quarter inch. Somebody had to wrangle that thing, a broken off quarter inch tip ring sleeve connector on a headphone jack. And I didn't have, obviously, I didn't have this headphone disconnector in the line because if I did, whoop, I wouldn't have had any hard work to do because it would have just disconnected like that. And the disc jockey would not have broken the headphone. I just couldn't believe my fortune at finding that. Have you ever gone to a station, Chris, and found a broken off headphone plug in the jack?
There, I've had broken headphone plugs. The biggest thing I, you know, wish I had those around for was I was always having to fix the announcer's headphones. They would always get these, you know, like the Sonys or whatever, and they'd forget to unplug, and they'd walk away and yank the cable out. And it was difficult because they own the headphones. I'm like, it's not my job to fix your headphones. But, you know, I don't know how many pairs of headphones in that building had the blue Kepco cable coming out of it with a soldered on, the bigger connector on there, eighth inch. And so, I mean, that would have been really, really handy for that, because that is a very common thing when you're on the air and you get all excited, you start to walk away and you still have your headphones on, you forget they're on and yank them right out. This solves that problem.
It does. And Mike Dosh, Catfish, as he's affectionately known, thought, hey, it'd be a great idea to use this like a MagSafe connector from an Apple product. And it just it goes right to you. And you can't do it wrong. You can't get left and right confused, because, look, it won't go together. But it will go together this way. You can get this in the quarter-inch tip ring sleeve size. You can also get it in the other popular size, the consumerish 3.5-millimeter size. And actually, you can mix and match these if you need to. Let's say that you you got quarter-inch going in the headphone jack, but your disc jockey's got the 3.5-millimeter. Those will go right together, and now you've got that kind of adaption right there.
Raise your hand if you've had to replace a bunch of those adapters over time.
There must be somebody has a drawer full of those quarter inch to eighth inch adapters.
Yes,
like once in a while you meet the guy that's got all the pens that everybody else ever lost.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. There's a drawer full of them somewhere.
Well, Angry Audio, hey, I'll finish it up here. They make these great headphone amplifiers. They have also the headphone amplifiers from Studio Hub. They got that line, the Decora-sized ones that fit into a box. There's this size right here that's nice and smooth on the bottom. These can be wired in series, daisy-chained. And they have the whole Studio Hub line, plus all their gadgets and gizmos, stuff that will really make your studio look great and make life better for not only your talent, disc jockeys, but also for you, the engineers. Check that out. AngryAudio.com. All right. Hey, we're also sponsored by Max Connect Wireless. You know that stuff works. You're in a place where you've got a lot of people heavily using a tower site. Maybe you're at a ball game. You're going to maybe a big soccer game, college, high school, maybe professional, and it's hard to get a signal out of there. Well, here's somebody to tell you about it.
I'm Gary Morrow, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
You know, I've also put this to use right here at my house, because you might remember a couple Christmases ago, there was a bombing in downtown Nashville, and part of the AT&T building was blown up there, and that cut off all kinds of services, including my AT&T fiber here at the house. So for a couple days, we were on Max Connect Wireless here at the house, got great service from that. And one of my radio stations, we had a tornado come through back about 3 years ago and took out the cable TV feed, and Max Connect to the rescue. So it works in all kinds of conditions. Thanks a lot, Max Connect Wireless, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, Chris Tarr is here, my co-host in Muckwonago, Wisconsin. John Bissette is here from over on the East Coast. You're down in South Carolina, aren't you, John?
Yes, I am, where it's like 99 degrees today.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. And slightly humid down there, too.
Absolutely. Hey,
let's move on to our next picture. We got a few to go, and good things, engineering stuff to talk about. What you got next, Suncast? I think you. Oh, all right.
Ah, great. Right. Chris was talking about the Nautel transmitters, and as you all know, the people that have those, they operate with FETs, and sometimes those FETs go bad. As you can see here, got some bad ones. This is a FLIR heat sensor or infrared camera picture, and it's just using this as a way to troubleshoot things. You can shine this in your electric box and see if you've got a circuit breaker that is running too hot. You can use it for checking what Chris was talking about, going out to the ATU for the AM stations, shine it around in there, find a capacitor that is about ready to blow, or if there are coil clips that are not making good connection, or no connections or minimal connections to your contactor out there. Just a lot of different uses. And the prices have come down on these things, Kirk. These are really neat. For a contract engineer, he can make a lot of money off of this because he can come in and do a complete assessment of a transmitter site and tell the owner, hey, this is what needs to be fixed. Here's some areas that are potentially going to go bad for you. And, oh, by the way, you want me to fix them? Well, I certainly will do that. So these things can pay for themselves, not only in troubleshooting time, getting your problem solved very quickly, but also in additional revenue, since it's something that you can charge a client station for.
Chris, I'm guessing that in some cases, warm is good, like on the picture that we've just seen there. It looked like there was one transistor that was not warm. One of these things
Correct.
Is not like the others. But in a breaker box, you don't want anything to be too warm. You want things to be, you know, generally not warm. Chris, how would you interpret or get a baseline for infrared readings?
Well, you know, the other thing that it's good for, too, is finding issues in your transmission line or in your low-pass filters, stuff like that, because if there's hot spots, you really want to know about it. But, you know, I would say for a baseline, you know, obviously, unless you're there to first put it in, you can't really get a good baseline that way. But, you know, you wait till things are good and are mm-hmm. running fine, and then, you know, you take your baseline reading. And you know, you'll know. I mean, if you have a breaker that's running, you know, fairly warm, that there's probably an issue there. You know, you're going to see a little bit of warmth on that stuff, but if it gets hot, you know there's a problem. So that's really, you know, the baseline reading is kind of common sense, but, you know, tracking down the issues is where those really shine. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people who, before they leave, they kind of run their hand on the line inside the building and just see, you know, is it warm? Is it hot? You know, you could actually tell and see if over time things are changing, because that's the biggest thing. You know, if you feel something before you leave and it's warm and you come back a month later, is it warmer? Do you really know? I mean, you know, you can't really remember how warm it was. So, yeah, I mean, those things are John's right. I mean, I have a couple of contract engineer friends that that's all they do. They have the really high end FLIR stuff and they go out to different sites and do those measurements.
John, what makes you say that these have come down in price? What have you seen on the market?
Well, they've had different. What it is, Kirk, is they've come up with different models. So, as Chris says, you've got the high end model that does everything, but then they've got features that have been taken away, and that's lowered the price. So, you know, you're still looking at several hundred dollars, but charging a radio station or a TV station $500 to come in and do an inspection, you've paid for the thing. So, you know, and from that point on, it's pure profit for all of the inspections that you do. And it's a good thing for insurance purposes, too. And that may be one way to sell it to a client station is, look, we have no idea. You've been through 20 engineers over the last 10 years, and we have no idea what the condition of your facility is. Taking this thing in and doing a measurement and then providing the pictures either in the form of a report or just the raw data, giving it to the engineer. And then that's something that where Chris was talking about the baseline, that's your baseline. So, hey, everything was working properly in this particular day. And you come back 6 months later and look at the pictures again, see what the new pictures are. And now all of a sudden, you've got two breakers that are running hot, not just one. And, you know, it can point you in the right direction there.
Good deal. Okay. All right. What is what we have? Another picture. We're going to move ahead with.
This will melt your heart.
You know, some people think that is beautiful. I have been married before, and that would not go over very far. That would definitely have to go to the basement.
You know, Ed Kirk, what's really funny, Harry Simons is a former director of engineering, contract engineer. He's retired, lives down in the Pensacola area, and he sent me this, and he outfitted his living room with all of this equipment that he had. And it was like, hey, why should I have a storage area? I'll turn this into a recording studio. And that's what it is. What's been so funny is the comments that I get from readers who say, well, what does Harry's wife think of all of this? And it comes back to just what you said. Harry doesn't have a wife, so he can do whatever he wants to do.
Oh, my goodness.
So anyway, okay. But it's a pretty cool picture of what to do with your spare equipment when you retire.
What was Harry's last name? I'm sorry, I didn't write it down.
Simons, S-I-M-O-N-S. Yes.
Okay. Now, in that right-hand picture, if Suncast can make that full screen again, there you go. There's a cowbell in there. You see it?
That's right. Yes, sir.
Right at the left-hand end of the xylophone.
There you go.
Oh, my gosh. Chris, you're not that musical, are you, to have all this in your house?
No, I do have, a console. I have microphones, stuff like that. But, yeah, and I have problems sometimes with Amy getting upset with all the stuff I have. So I'll say that now. I have my own space. She calls it the fun corner. Go to your fun corner and, keep to yourself.
Have any of you ever heard this phrase before? Why do your speakers need to be so big?
Yeah. Or loud.
Or loud. Yeah. Yeah. Well, if it's something that she enjoys, musically, then maybe loud is okay once in a while. But, yeah.
Do you really need 5 speakers?
My joke, when she says how many of whatever, so she'll go like, well, how many pens do you need? And I say all of them.
Sure that a lot of our viewers today can relate to all of that, Chris.
Sometimes the special people in our lives don't like us gone if we have to go to, Chris, you take a road trip. John, you've taken plenty of road trips.
Sure.
And the question, how long will you be gone? The whole time.
Till I'm done.
Yeah. The whole time. Till I'm done. Very good. Gosh. That's a good contract engineer's response.
let's get one more picture here before we see our next sponsor. What's one more picture here, Suncast?
Here we go. So on the left, we have a transmitter exciter, and there was a connector, looked like a sub-miniature D connector that was removed, and nobody plugged the hole up. And this contract engineer got called in, and station was off the air. And when he popped the top, you see what's on the right, and you can understand why the station was not operating anymore. And those, yes, indeed, are skeletons that are, those little barb things are parts of the spine of the mice. There was like a whole family of mice that died inside there. So what's really bizarre, Kirk and Chris, is looking at the size. We all know how big a 9-pin sub-miniature D connector is. It's maybe, about a half inch deep or wide, and that a mouse could fit themselves in there. And two mice could fit themselves in there, and one of them gets pregnant and has a whole bunch of babies, and you just look at the mess that they've made. It's pretty amazing. So don't discount little holes. It's like a welcome sign for the mouse.
It's worse than that because did this mama stay inside this piece of equipment the whole time she was pregnant? Or did she go in and out that hole while she was pregnant?
All I could say is that MOV looks like it's in good shape. It's next to the nest there.
That's right. Hey, if we had that picture back up, John, we solved the mystery with a little closer inspection. That piece of gear is made by Energy Onyx. It says on the back there, Energy Onyx.
There we go.
From Valaty, New York. So that company is no longer in business, although I think somebody's maybe taking care of some of the spare parts from it. But yeah, that's some piece of gear from Energy Onyx. Looks like it may be an IPA, an intermediate power amplifier, but I could be wrong. The RCA connectors on it, but wow, oh my goodness. So yeah, plug up those holes in your gear, otherwise you might get visitors that you didn't plan. And the good news about that, go ahead.
I was just to say, it kind of goes along with what you were asking, Chris, whether he gets the mice in the circuit disconnects or not. Those guys will show up anywhere, won't they?
It is surprising the holes that mice can get into. I've had them inside of, you know, like halfway up an exciter drawer in a Nautel, an old ND5 AM transmitter. I mean, how would they possibly get in there? And it just takes a tiny little hole. How many Burk remote controls have you seen that have nests in them? Because they have, you know, if you don't have both cards in there, those slots are open. And you're sitting there going, how could they possibly work themselves in there? I mean, anything that has any kind of hole in it in your building, if you know you have a rodent problem, plug them up, because that is exactly what's going to happen.
Do you get any benefit out of putting mothballs either in the transmitter building or in the equipment itself? Because you could pop a couple mothballs in. I'm one of those weird people. I kind of like the smell of mothballs. I don't know why that is, but I do. They wouldn't keep me away. But I've never seen a mouse nest built in a basket that also contains mothballs. I've never seen a snake laying in a basket of mothballs. Yeah. Chris, any experience with that?
Yeah, I use mothballs, pouring pints all into a container also, like a dish kind of helps too. All that stuff is good, but even better is to turn off all the lights in the building, close the door and see where you see light. If you can get them before they come in, then it's a whole lot easier to manage them after they get into the building.
John, Chris, of a product. Right.
I was just going to say, along with that, before we get to that, though, with what Chris was saying with the light, talking again about ATUs, taking one of those battery powered lanterns and stick it in with the station off the air, of course, stick it inside your ATU box, close the box up at night and look around and see if any light is escaping, because that is another place where mice will make a nest, and they can really ruin your day. It's a bad situation. And the item you were talking about is found in garden centers, and it's put together by Bonide, and it's Mouse Away, I believe is what it's called. It's a little packet. It smells like peppermint. And it's very pleasant smelling, but it will keep the mice at bay. And the things last for, maybe a couple of months. So you get three or four of them. They're sealed in a little packet. You open up the packet, sprinkle the little bags around, and come back a couple of months later and repeat the process. But it's a really good product that will keep mice out of your transmitter building.
Good deal. Good deal. Hey, guys, we're going to take a break in a minute. Our show is sponsored in part by our friends at Innovonics Broadcast, available through Broadcaster General Store. But before we play the usual little video where they're introducing, their beautiful mod monitors that they just introduced this year, I got to purchase, not at all my first Innovonics products. I've been actually Innovonics was the very first product I ever purchased as an engineer way back in like 1980 or 81. I bought a MAP II AM audio processor and loved it. That was a long time ago, wasn't it? 42 years ago. Well, and of course, I've bought a few other Innovonics audio processors, like the 222 for AM service, getting that NRSC compatibility. But I haven't had a chance at my own radio stations to get anything lately. And I got a chance to get an Aran 650 receiver, remotely controllable receiver recently. And I just love it. One day we'll do a little ad based on that. We'll give you a little demo for it. Not today. I just wanted to report that we got one there. We got a nice outdoor antenna that points toward Greenville, Mississippi. And we're able to pick up, I don't know, like seven or eight of our FM stations in the area. Almost every one of our stations we can pick up because the receiver is so sensitive and so selective, and we can stream the audio to ourselves and we can look at all the RDS data. That's often been a problem for us, is to make absolutely sure that our RDS data is displaying the way that it should be. You almost can't rely on any particular vehicle since they all display differently. I just want to put a little shout out for that Aran 650. What an amazing box that is. Yeah, Chris.
I have those in all my markets. That's how I monitor, because I've got stations all over the state. That's what I use to monitor RDS and signal strength. And you can set alarms for it too, so it'll email you if something drops out.
I'm glad you like it too. I'm loving it. Hey, we're going to hear from Innovonics and their new HD mod monitors. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Gary Lerman. I'm Sales and Marketing Manager from Innovonics. I'm joined here by our President and CEO, Ben Barber. And we're here to tell you about two new products that we're very excited about. They're HD modulation monitors, the model 551 and 552. And Ben's going to take us through some of the features. Ben, what can you tell us about these?
The 551 has the big display, 7-inch touchscreen display. You can look at different parameters instantly by walking up to it and touching it, getting information that you need. It also has the LED displays for FM total modulation, left, right, FM, HD 1, 2, 3, and 4. The other thing that the 551 has is that it has full-time audio outputs on studio hub connectors on the back, both analog as well as AES digital. So you've got FM, HD 1 through 4 there full-time. The 552 doesn't have the display, doesn't have the metering, and doesn't have the full-time audio outputs, but the web interfaces are identical for remote viewing and monitoring.
Great. Thanks very much, Ben. These products are going to be available in January 2022. Contact us at InnovonicsBroadcast.com for more information. Thanks very much.
And you can get these from Broadcasters General Store. That's where I would go if I were buying one, and that's where we've got our other stuff. BGS.cc is the website. Broadcaster General Store. They're family owned and operated since 1979. Let's see, I started engineering in, well, officially, I guess, in 1984. So I've been buying from them
1904.
That's right, 1904. their phone number, anybody know their phone number? I do. It's 352-622-7700. In fact, I just talked to Jessica Shoot today, she had some good news for us. So always appreciate talking to folks at Broadcast General Store. There you go. Thanks a lot for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right. We're going to continue on with the parade of pictures because they're all entertaining and we can learn something as well. Suncast, surprise us with what's next.
Ooh. Hey, here we go. Well, we're talking about air conditioning, and I guess this is a good intro into us talking about the maintenance things, Kirk. This is made by a company called Oslo, O-S-L-O, and it's a mini split system. But what's really cool about it is that it fits on a windowsill. So if you've got a studio office or wherever that you need additional cooling, this thing, you lift up the window, set that thing down, and bring the window back down, and it's a just a sweet little way to cool things off, whether it be a small transmitter room or an office or a studio. And from what I understand, in the studio, because the fans and everything are outside, there's not a lot of noise that goes along with it. So anyway, kind of cool to look at.
That is, Chris, you ever seen one like that? I'm looking here online. You can get them. I'm seeing some smaller sizes right here, but you may be able to get them in bigger sizes. I'm seeing an 8,000 BTU. But yeah, instead of having to keep the window so far open, you get to close the window almost all the way back down again. Interesting. I hope they have something to fill up the little hole there on the right. Otherwise, the pregnant mice are going to get in right there.
I think that's called foam rubber, right? It may be.
Yeah. One would think they supply something with that. But yeah, that's
Go ahead and seal it up. But yeah, and what's nice about this, about any kind of air conditioner, is your little can of spray. You want to show that to everybody?
Oh, yeah, that's right here. Let me grab this. And so at my own house, I was thinking, okay, it's time to clean the outdoor condenser units. My house has two air conditioning systems in it. And because the house used to be a duplex. Now we've made a single family dwelling. And so I'm thinking, I wonder, should I do something more than just spray with a garden hose the outside unit? Is there any kind of soap I should use to get it even cleaner? And sure, there are some foaming soaps that you can use. And when you use the foaming soaps, you should use a brush like this one. This just came in from Amazon today. So I'll be cleaning my outdoor units, although the foam hasn't come in yet. Although you don't have to buy a commercial foam. John, you were saying that some people just say use what diluted dishwashing
liquid. Right, right, dishwashing liquid. And if you have one of those spray attachments that goes on the end of your hose, it doesn't have to be a high pressure attachment, but just one that has the little container at the bottom. You fill with the liquid, and it mixes the water from the hose with the dishwashing soap. And just start at the top and work your way down, then start at the bottom, work your way back up. The point being that you go ahead and get the coils nice and saturated with the soap. Let them sit for a little while, and then, you know, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes, something like that, and then come back and rinse everything with the just the garden hose by itself. You don't want to use a pressure washer. That can damage the fins and damage the coil. But just a garden hose will be actually all you need, and that will clean all the dirt, and you'd be amazed at the garbage that comes out of there. There is a YouTube video of a guy that sent this tip in, and he improved the cooling of his air conditioning system by, like, I think it was either 4 or 5 degrees. He took a measurement of the cooling before he did the cleaning and then afterwards, and it was amazing what the improvement was. So that combined with making sure you got no dirty air filters, and you're in good shape.
If you really want to be accurate about that, you need to get that differential. So take a temperature reading at the air intake in your house, and then take a temperature reading at where the air is coming out, and see what that differential is. And now the other thing I got, though, of actually a bit more interest is, I can't get a garden hose. I don't want to get a garden hose into the basement here with the evaporator units, the indoor units. So this is some evap foam, no rinse. Now, it says no rinse, and then I read the fine print, and what it actually does is that the condensate ends up rinsing the coils. So this foam breaks up pretty quickly, and then as condensate forms indoors on your indoor unit, this is assuming it's a central heating and air system, then this will clean it up. So and then, of course, goes down into the catch tray, and hopefully it goes away. Although I also got one of those brushes to go way into the pipe that leads away from the drip tray, because those things tend to clog up, and then you got water all over your house. So anyway, right. I thought this was kind of good. Chris, you got any experience with these foams to clean?
I have not, but that is very interesting. I'm going to check that out. You know, the other thing I do too, because I have some places. You know, we were just saying that the other day. I've got, you know, 25 radio stations and then another probably 15 translators. A good chunk of these buildings I put, because I can't be everywhere to do this, I put on service contracts, and that will pay for itself right away. You know, they come in, some of them are twice a year, sometimes are every quarter, some places, and they do the filter changes, belts, cleaning, they'll do the coil cleaning, all of that stuff. And, you know, it's worth every penny. It's just like generator maintenance. You know, I have companies come in twice a year and check the generators, make sure they're going to run.
By the way, one thing that often happens with air conditioners is the motor starter capacitors or the run capacitors will dry out. That's real common, and they're pretty easy to replace if you have any clues what you're doing. Lots of videos on YouTube on how to test them if you don't know how, and how to replace them. So I would definitely.
Oh, by the way, Kirk, you know, if you've got that hole in the window for the split thing, what we do in Wisconsin is we take a cheese head. Pack the cheese head into that hole, and of course, that fills it right up.
Of course you do. Cheese head.
I guess, you knew there was something for that, huh?
All right.
Yeah, you know, it fills lots of different cracks and things.
There you go.
Let's have the microphone. Oh, okay. We'll do this picture. All right. This is such a polite notice here. John, tell us about this sign.
This was installed, I believe, the engineer said it was about 20, 25 years ago, and it is still standing, and they have had absolutely no break-ins or problems. And the key there is, I think, point number two, that the building contains broadcast transmitters, but there is very little value on the open market. So if someone's looking and sees this big building and thinks, wow, there's got to be a lot of stuff in there that I can steal and make a lot of money off of, if you let them know that, look, you've got a half-ton transmitter in there, and that's about it. You're not going to be able to do anything with that. It's a good deterrent. To give you an idea of how old the sign is, though, you notice they've got the tower information. This is even way before tower registration time that people needed to do. Anyway, it's a neat idea to have this. I asked the engineer, I said, well, what happens if you call that number? And he says, well, I don't know. He says, I guess somebody will answer it. But whether the number is still in service or not is a whole nother story. But just a neat sign, though. I think it's a good idea to have this kind of signage around your transmitter site.
This messaging, I think, is psychologically really, really good. First of all, on the downside, you do need to assume that the vandals looking at this site can read, and so we have to assume that. But let's look at the sign again, if you don't mind, Suncast, because the messaging here, the way it's laid out, I think is actually pretty clear. First of all, a bit of a warning. You are being observed and videotaped from the KDVR TV control room in Denver. Ooh, well, okay. So already we're ID'd already, basically. Then it says, hey, in this building, there's broadcast trend, very large and dangerous, with little value in the open market. That's good. Although I might have added a little funny to the end. I might have said, although you might could sell them to the folks over at Channel 8, but they don't really have much cash on hand. So, okay, then there's the phone number for information if you have questions. Look, people hiking up there might indeed have liked to know more about it, which brings us to point number four. I love this. You know, if you're a hiker and walking by, you don't really have vandalism on your mind, but you might be curious. Well, there you go. Here's how tall the tower is. Here's where it's located. And here's ground level. You know, these days you might put a QR code on there that would take you to a Google map of where you are or to some information about that individual tower. And then no valuable tools. That's kind of like the sign that goes on a truck that says, driver has no money.
You know, I just thought of something with the sign that, you know, now let's say I want to get rid of a transmitter and I don't want to move it. Maybe I could say this transmitter is very valuable. The door is unlocked and just see what happens.
No, that's a really good point, Chris.
Yeah. Now there's another sign that maybe you've seen before. I've got a couple. I didn't put them up, but I do think they're kind of funny. Maybe there's a place for this kind of humor. I got a couple signs at transmitter sites that say danger, high voltage. Not only will this kill you, it will hurt the whole time you're dying.
Exactly.
We've heard about people, you know, cutting out, you know, a transmission line for the copper, right? We've heard about, I don't know if it's faked or not, but I thought I saw a picture of some burn marks of somebody's hands on coax or AM something. Anyway, you know, they definitely got burned by what they were doing. And all right, John, we got one more picture. Shall we take a quick look at it? The microphone.
That sounds great.
All right. Well, the microphone's not too special. It looks like one of those fairly inexpensive Chinese condenser mics. But what's it say?
Which I understand from you is really a pretty good little microphone. It's a neat buy, especially for a podcaster or something like that. The one question that came up was, it is a cardioid mic, and the engineer had to make a mark on which side you speak into because with the windscreen on, it's kind of hard to tell. But he wanted to come up with a unique mic stand. So this is a brake gear from a bicycle, talking about bicycle chains earlier. And Frank Hurdle, a consulting engineer, came up with this. He had one of these things laying around, and he had the parts. And I think the whole system, the mic not included, just the brackets and hardware, was like $13, and most of it he found in his junk box. But you know, just a neat little way to come up with a mic stand that isn't going to cost a lot of money. It looks kind of neat, and it's if you tack the microphone on and as well for way under $100, you've got a very workable microphone.
You'd have to use some countersunk screws on the bottom side or something that's flat, whether he welded tack welded some studs on there or Yeah, screws.
Yeah, he's got little rubber bumpers on the bottom that are underneath the plate.
Okay.
So you know, so that keeps it raised up above the ground or the desktop. So anyway, kind of a neat idea. Frank comes up with some really neat little projects, and I really enjoy having him in Workbench because of the just his thinking out of the box of, hey, I've got all this junk. What can I do with it? You know.
Chris, I'd love to see some steampunk radio studio sometime. That kind of reminds me of
that
steampunk.
Would be cool. Yeah. I think the one of the stations, I think I've inherited a station or two that was unintentionally steampunk. Just, you know, the gear that was there.
You're going to have to send me some pictures for Workbench, Chris, and I won't identify you.
Absolutely.
We'll print them.
You know what? I don't know if we've ever done a worst I've ever seen show. That would be fun to do. A worst I've ever seen. You know, we'll submit whether it's transmitter sites or towers or old satellite dishes or studios, right? The worst I've ever seen.
You know, Kirk, what you ought to do is maybe have viewers send those in to you. Say we'll do it in September. So start sending your pictures in now. And I bet you could fill the whole hour.
All right, I will look at the calendar and we'll see when would be appropriate to now who's a really who do we need for a guest for a show like that, like a really bad engineer?
You have it right here we go. I volunteer as tribute.
Oh, good gosh. What if we're getting out? No, I don't want to embarrass anybody. I mean, we've all probably done work that we're not entirely proud of, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely.
Some people have made a career out of it.
And others have made a career following them. Fixing them.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Hey, guys, we're going to come back with our tip of the week. I'm going to ask both Chris and John to magically come up with a tip of the week. I might figure out one myself, but we're going to hear from Broadcast Bionics. And, you know, engineers, you can look like a just an absolute prince to your staff, to your management, by looking at Broadcast Bionics products. They have things that will just make your station run better and give you an amazing online presence. So check it out. We're going to check out this from Broadcast Bionics right now.
Welcome to the Bionic Studio. The Bionic Studio brings all audience interaction to the fingertips of a production team in radio, TV, and podcast. Our workflow-led system is working 24/7 around the world for small broadcasters and national and international networks. Our telephony module, Bionic Talk Show, allows cost-effective centralization, remote operation, scalability, and resilience across an entire network of stations, but at the same time is used in single-studio self-op environments. Social media curation and activity is now considered a broadcast-critical part of programming. Bionic Social means the studio isn't overwhelmed with a wall of interaction from an ever-growing number of social platforms. We combine SMS, MMS, and email together with a speech-to-text service for listeners using smart speakers. We enable studio teams to curate, filter, and display all platforms in one place, and post text, images, and video content to multiple platforms in one operation. Effortless collection of video content with Bionic Director has helped position some of the world's most successful stations as leaders in viral content, generating appointments to listen and free marketing via retweets and shares. Bionic Contest enables end-to-end tracking of on-air competitions, live reads, and prizes. These could be on-air contests, automated SMS entry, or online. Anywhere and Skype TX for Radio brings high quality audio and video contribution into the studio with ease. No need for dedicated PCs to run different applications. Everything is controlled within the Bionic Studio UI, and incoming connections are visible to users along with all other platforms. Our codec integration enables connection, algorithm configuration, and directory to a wide range of IP and ISDN codecs. The Bionic Studio, a unique suite of products designed to enable your talent to work smarter.
This stuff works so well. It's just amazing. And, you know, these are not only these are friends of mine, they're great colleagues and clever, clever, clever people. Check out at bionics.co.uk or just go to bionic.radio, not plural, singular, bionic.radio and check them out. Thanks a lot, Bionic Broadcast Bionics, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech and for the great work that you guys do to make radio and multimedia better. All right, it's time for a tip of the week. Who can we put on the spot first? Don't everybody raise your hand at once. Chris Tarr, you look so ready. You just look so ready.
Oh, Kirk. So here's what I've got. And it's actually worked out for me just spectacularly. I've been doing this a lot lately. I use, and I don't actually know what the term is, but basically it's a telecom consultant. And so what happens is when I need to get connectivity into a location, I call, her name's Kristen. I call Kristen. She does all the legwork. She finds out, you know, all the different providers, what the costs are. She manages the paperwork on the installation, keeps on the companies to make sure the things get done on time. And the way it works is she gets commission on that, from the companies. And she, you know, she's independent, so she works with everybody. You know, she'll give me a whole menu of who, you know, here's who provides service to your location, pick whichever you want. The other thing she'll do too is, if you still have, you know, phone systems and things like that, you can enter into an agreement where they'll come in and audit all of that. And then basically their payment is they get a cut of whatever you save in a year. So it's really effective. And like I said, for transmitter sites and buildings, it's great because we're starting to roll out fiber now to a lot of our locations. And, you know, I was getting these crazy high quotes, and because she does a lot of business with them, she gets the best deals. And then again, she gets a commission on it. So it doesn't cost me anything to have her do the legwork. And, you know, if I run into an issue somewhere, in fact, just today, there was supposed to be an installation. And, you know, I'm seeing three or four emails from her group saying, hey, where are we in the installation? It's supposed to happen. Is this going to happen today? And kind of keeps track of all that. So totally worth, you know, obviously because it's not costing much. You know, it's, I know we all like to kind of do these things ourselves. But boy, I'll tell you, it's just a weight off my shoulders not having to deal with that.
Do you use her services, Kristen Roberts, do you use her services for telephony only or for IT as well?
Oh, you know Kristen, or at least you know her last name.
I'll tell you, I'll not mention it again, but I will put a link to the company that she works with in today's show notes. That way you can contact the company. But yeah, I thought that they were telephony only, but you've just opened my eyes. They probably do... IT, if you need IT connectivity.
Yeah, right. And, you know, again, you know, all these different sites, you know, because again, we're in the process now of connecting all of our sites, and we just bought some new stations. And and it's great because I'll just say, here's the location. You know, here's what we're looking for. And she comes back with all of the information. I tell her what I want. She sends me the paperwork and, you know, really manages the whole process from beginning to end. And she's a good friend of mine. She's great. I used her she was with a different company when I was with Intercom Odyssey, and we used her there as well. So it's just a great way to go. I don't have to deal with it.
Interesting that you bring this up, because I've got an upcoming webinar for Telos Alliance next week. One of our guest presenters is Alex Roman out of New York City. And Alex, one of his big tips is use an IT broker, use a connectivity broker. Yeah. And that way you don't have to try to get through all the telephone junk to find out, can I get even DSL at this location? And a broker will just fix all that for you. And you'd be amazed at what you can get that you didn't know about. If you go the consumer route, not going to be, no bueno.
And Kristen's been known to watch Tort. So, you know, she's good that way too.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. All right, good. I'll put an appropriate link in the show notes. John, you got a tip of the week for us, please.
Well, I do, and I'm going to pick up on what Chris was talking about. You and I have both worked with Kristen, and she's a great lady. She really does help our customers. But what I wanted to talk about was, if you decide to do a telephone audit yourself, before you do it, you go to your general manager and say, hey, look, I'm going to do an audit find out what we're paying on our telephone lines, but I want 20% or 25% of whatever savings we come up with. I did this about 30 years ago and saved the station about $15,000. The phone company wrote a check for $15,000. Did I get anything for it? Zip. I thought, well, I might get a little bit of a bonus, $100 or something like that. Not even a thank you. So the point is if you're going to do something like this, and Chris mentioned it's a lot of work, make sure you're going to get something for it, that you're going to be rewarded for your efforts. This is above and beyond your normal engineering duties, and it's not something that you should do out of the goodness of your heart. Not that you want to hold up the radio station, but with all these mergers and sales, and we found the station had sold the station 10 years earlier, and we were still paying for radio loops for that station. And it ended up to be several thousand dollars just for that. And we had to prove when we bought the station and when, you know, the lines were no longer being used. But the point was the phone company had to make good on it. And they, oh, well, we'll give you a credit. No, no, no. We want a check. And that's what they did. They wrote a check. So, you know, the time, as Chris says, having whether you have someone like Kristen do it or you do it yourself, the point is you can save a lot of money, and you should be rewarded for this extra effort in trying to generate some extra savings for the station. So that would be my tip. That and take a trip to Harbor Freight if you haven't gone there lately. They've got some really cool stuff.
By the way, the other way to profit from your knowledge of saving the station money by doing a telephony audit and getting rid of the stuff that hasn't been used in years is take the bookkeeper out to lunch and propose a 50-50 split.
Hey, there you go. Absolutely.
Because the bookkeeper can make that happen.
Or if she can turn you in. Friends, well, you're right. And Chris, I know you will agree. If you're not friends with your business manager, you're just not doing the job right. Business manager,
right? They can make your life great, or they can make your life miserable. So always be
absolutely, yes. Really, really.
Don't. By the way, that was not my tip of the week. That was my joke of the week. Okay, so be clear on that.
Well, it's a good tip, Kirk.
And with that, we got to skedaddle out of here. See, we're out of time. I had time for a joke, but no tip. Chris Tarr, thank you for being with us. John Bissett, thank you for being with us. Really appreciate you guys being here today. We had a fun show, learned a few things, just like just getting together and talking about this fun stuff. Got some great ideas here. So watch for the show notes, watch for the worst I've ever seen. And in 2 weeks from today, 2 weeks from yesterday, 2 weeks from the day, I'm going to be in Austin, Texas at the Texas Association of Broadcasters, giving a talk or something. And I'll be giving the talk about the same time as the show. So we're actually going to do the show on Wednesday, August the 3rd, instead of Thursday, August the 4th. I already talked to Suncast. He agreed. And we're going to do the show on a Wednesday in 2 weeks from now, live from the Texas Association of Broadcasters. Let's hope the air conditioning works in Austin, Texas. We got to go. Thanks to all of our sponsors. You're terrific. Appreciate you being with us. Thanks to Suncast for producing today's show. Chris Tarr here almost every week as our co-host, and our guests have just been terrific. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.